Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Views from the Oregon Trail. I am your not-so-esteemed host, D.L. Williams, back to once again blab and wax philosophical about the goings-on in this upside-down, whoopside-down, wonderful world we're living in. So before we get started on the topics of the day, I want to wish everybody an early happy Easter, which is a very enjoyable and fun time of the year for me. It's one of my favorites. Those who know me know I am a cook at heart, and cooking for the holidays such as Christmas and Easter are usually kind of like my showtime for the year. Unfortunately for me, due to my current medical situation, my ability to cook is pretty much on the shelf. I am riding the bench this year. However, I had been ordered to be a coach, and my poor daughter is going to get coached through a whole host of the traditional holiday foods that I'm generally responsible for, mostly because I'm the only one left that knows how to make any of it. But she's going to get, I'm not going to call it a crash course, because she has assisted me for years in the preparation of a lot of these things, and I firmly believe she's going to do a great job. We're all going to have a great holiday, a lot of great food. We're going to enjoy ourselves, and I hope you all do out there as well.
There's upside down everything all over town. It all looks so funny that I've got to frown. Because a frown is a smile when you turn upside down. In an upside down, what side down? Whoops, side down, oops, side down, what side down? Upside down world!
Okay, so that brings us to our opening story of the week, which will take us to the lovely state of Missouri. It seems the Department of Conservation's Powder Valley Nature Center, which is a veterinary hospital run under the auspices of the Department of Conservation for the care and medical well-being of animals that are in state-owned parks and conservation areas in the state of Missouri. Now, it seems that they've had a very unique guest in their care for the last several weeks, a two-headed snake by the name of Tiger Lily, who had to undergo recent surgery because her due-to-be-released eggs were essentially stuck inside of her ovaries, causing inflammation and internal bleeding, which was noticed by veterinarians when the snake began sneezing blood every time it ate. The surgery to correct was apparently successful. It's going to take Tiger Lily about a month to recover. Why was I not aware that there's a two-headed snake in Missouri being displayed in a public preservation area? I did a little bit of investigating into this because I was certain there had to be some kind of logical, scientific explanation for this creature. And it actually is as basic as something like this could be. It seems that this snake was found about 6 years ago by a family in the woods. It was then isolated and brought into this preserve to be cared for and protected. After veterinarians got a chance to really get a good look at the thing, it turns out that it was actually a pair of conjoined twins that never separated below the head level. So the two heads are independent, but they share a common body. I'm left to wonder, if one head eats, is the other head still hungry? Since the last time a snake talked to people and explained to them anything revolved around eating something, really bad stuff happened. So, much like how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop, this just might be a case of the world may never know. Our next story takes us to academia. For those of you that don't know this in particular, which I'm guessing is probably most people, Ivy League curriculum is not exactly considered a common point of discussion at the average American dinner table. However, Harvard University has in fact began offering a course in the music and cultural impact of Taylor Swift. Apparently, this class has been very popular among the student body and has been discussed at length in the media. Apparently now, having been influenced and inspired by Harvard University, the State University of Vermont has announced plans to institute and begin offering next year a course in the studies of Weird Al Yankovic and his music. Now, with all the negativity that academia receives these days, it's wonderful to see the State University of Vermont making an effort to offer an education in the history of one of America's true national treasures, the one and only Weird Al Yankovic. Anyone who knows me personally knows I am a true Al-aholic, a true blues superfan from my youngest years. I own everything he ever recorded. I have several live shows on recording, both old-fashioned bootleg style and live video. And to be perfectly honest, I was absolutely giddy over the moon over the mockumentary they did. I believe it was last year or the year before that. Daniel Radcliffe did an absolutely knockout job. He couldn't have been more perfect. I don't think anybody could have done better. So the idea that a college is actually going to try and teach a course based solely on Weird Al and his impact on pop culture and America in general is sweet news to these ears. But since we're on this subject, may I make a suggestion to academia all over this country? I have a list of several individuals you need to begin teaching courses on immediately. We have Betty White, Kevin Bacon, Dick Clark, and Mark Hamill. And as long as you're at it, you can add Mel Brooks to that list as well. What say you, folks? Any other national treasures we need to add to that list for academia to get a move on? Bringing the youngins up to speed? I guess I figure if they can teach gender identity theory, they can teach them about Footloose, Spaceballs, and the Golden Girls. Okay, this is my favorite story this entire week. The city of New Orleans has a problem. Police Superintendent Ann Kirkpatrick testified before the City Council's Criminal Justice Committee that their police station building is infested with cockroaches and rats, and the rodents in particular seeming to be having quite the good time destroying a particular type of evidence. You see, the rats have been devouring the storage lockers that are filled with confiscated marijuana. As a matter of fact, they're doing this so incessantly that the police superintendent testified, and I quote, "The rats are running around high as a kite all over our building." Okay, so forgive my 12-year-old inner child for laughing, because I know this has to be a horrible work environment for the good police of New Orleans who are just trying to do their job. And I can't even imagine trying to work in such a filth, literally filled with vermin. But there's one particular part of this I can't work my way around, and it's the quote, "There's rats all over the place, high as kites." I'm just trying to figure out, logically and reasonably, how do you pick out a high rat from a not high rat? Like, are there rats laying on couches just contemplating the deeper cosmic meaning of silly putty? Like, are there little rat drum circles all over the police station? Or maybe it was even better. Maybe the rats, like, constructed some kind of complicated crane pulley-like device, Secret of NIMH style, and were trying to launch the snack machine out through the ceiling. Again, I beg of you people to forgive my inner child for laughing at this. I know intellectually it's not funny. I know that. I know it's a terrible situation for the law enforcement and those poor folks who have to work around this. But it is pretty funny when you try to envision a bunch of rats who are high as kites. I will add this 2 cents to the matter. New Orleans, if this is a reflection of your capability of presenting a quality and dignified example and reflection of your city image, you've got to do better. Because I'm telling you, maybe this is just what happens when your city's greatest economic model is to market itself as a bastion of old-fashioned Southern grace and modern hedonism with a splash of voodoo for flavor. Maybe this is just what happens. But on the bright side, if New Orleans keeps following this trajectory, it won't be very long before they can market themselves not just as the place where Mardi Gras happens, not just as the place where Madame de la Rue slaughtered slaves and tortured them and sewed them together. It won't be just the place where you can go see antebellum mansions on the outskirts of town that were underwater from Katrina. It'll be the place that they can market as the entrance to Dante's Hell. Good luck, New Orleans. You're going to need it, and it's going to take a lot more than jazz music to save you. And so that brings us to this point in the show. We're going to take a break for just a moment while I catch my breath. And we're going to talk about our main topic of the week. Have the disabled been locked out of the United States government? Stay tuned. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back. It's a very strange thing when you think about how the United States is governed. In that, theoretically, our Congress, our Senate, should be made up of a patchwork that represents all the different, we'll call it, demographics of United States society. Now, I'm certainly not going to make an argument that that's how it's worked consistently throughout the country's history. Matter of fact, more often than not, it is far from its intended design. However, in the last 50 to 70 years, we've seen quite the push for diversity in government at all levels. We've seen incredible gains made by minorities such as African Americans, Asian Americans, even Native Americans have all taken places in upper government and many, many in lower levels, but certainly civil government has taken on a much more diverse flavor in the last 50 years. And it's not just the government, especially, of course, we see a lot of the influx in media and in television and commentary. We see these groups gaining much more exposure than they had ever had in the past in the United States. Branching off of the previous gains made by the minority populations, ethnically speaking, we've seen political minorities such as the LGBTQ movement as well as the Tea Party movement from just a few years back gaining exposure and places at the table in the government. So that sets the stage for what I'm about to talk about right now. Did you know that in the United States right now, there are approximately 48 to 50 million disabled individuals? I will guarantee you that there is not a single person who will ever listen to this show who is not directly impacted by someone who has a disability, including yourself. That being said, I would like you to sit back and think to yourself about why is it that you can't think of a disabled individual currently in governmental power. Over 80% of disabled individuals currently receiving Social Security disability benefits are former workers, individuals who are fully cognitively capable of participating at their desire in civil discourse and governmental function. Now, do you know why that is not the case? Why they're not participating? Why you don't see individuals with disabilities running for public office? Why you don't see them trying to be appointed to committees that are part of the discussion of how the disabled are worked with through the government? What kind of benefits are being offered to them? How the country is relating to them? Do you want to know why? Here's the reason. If you are deemed disabled and incapable of working a full-time job to support yourself and rely upon Social Security disability benefits, you are barred from running for public office due to the fact that the Social Security disability can, in fact, interpret your ability or willingness to take part in a governmental function as an ability to work a full-time job. That is ludicrous. I have known paraplegics who, with the proper accommodation, can very easily be active and productive individuals in their city or town councils. However, they can't do that because the Social Security Administration absurdly suggests the idea that if you can do a one-hour video call once a month, you're capable of working full-time. Now, if that doesn't sound ridiculous, try this one. I was reading about a case in, I believe it was Idaho, not so long ago, and I'm sorry, I couldn't find the article again, but I swear to you I read this. There was a particular woman who was appointed to a unpaid, unelected government position, a volunteer job, okay? That's what that means, a volunteer, to be the official spokesperson for the Tree Festival. She was disabled. She was in a wheelchair and suffered from terrible fibromyalgia. She'd been on disability for 20 years. Her accepting of that position as spokesperson for the Tree Festival resulted in her disability benefits being terminated because they determined that if she can have her picture taken in front of some pretty trees, she's able to go and get a job. That makes me want to go to Congress and ask them,
what's the matter with you?
Now, don't get me wrong here, folks. I'm not talking about anything crazy. I am a true compassionate conservative. I'm a firm believer in picking yourself up by your bootstraps, of working hard, of doing what you're supposed to do, following the rules of the game, and making the best success of yourself that you're capable of. But this seems like a culling of the herd. A sectioning off, a silencing, and a de facto straitjacket being applied to an entire sector of the population who, through no fault of their own whatsoever, are physically incapable of the very things that most everyone take for granted in being able to work towards financial stability and gain financial and economic ground. They're not able to do that. And it would seem like, politically speaking, the leaders of this country, through the Social Security Agency and a host of laws which have been enacted which disproportionately restrict the capability of the disabled to attempt to run for positions of leadership. And after researching this subject extensively over the last week or two, I've come to realize that it certainly doesn't appear like our country, and in many cases, it's the state governments, do not give a crap. And you would think that a voting bloc of nearly 50 million people in total would be a crowd that politically you would want in your pocket. But it does not seem that way. The Republican Party seems to be only worried about pitching get-to-work programs, but it doesn't make any real effort to address those who really are not capable of working. And it gives off a rather odious stench of, we're sorry, unfortunately you do not fit into the world as we envision it. Please feel free to accept these table scraps. Oh, and be sure to be grateful for them. The Democratic Party, on the other hand, seems to be sickeningly complacent on the issue, as it seems like they're more concerned with everybody getting in line ideologically before they'll make any effort to even throw them a bone.
We are Democrats.
We will add your biological and technological distinctiveness to our own. Your culture will adapt to service us. Resistance is futile.
So it doesn't seem like the political leadership of the country has any real desire to do anything about what is a disgustingly stacked deck. This may be the land of the free and the home of the brave, but when it comes to giving the disabled a place at the adults' table, it would seem our leadership is sending out the very clear message that, sorry, no seating available. And in the halls of political and moral justice, perhaps the Duke said it best.
Afraid it's a packed court.
If there is anything to be said positively about this situation, is that there are several organizations, both at the state and federal level, that are working to unite and create a bona fide voting bloc from the disabled community, and that's probably what it's going to take. If you look at just the disabled voters who are actually on full Social Security disability, you would account for more than the entirety of the registered voters in Colorado, Virginia, and South Carolina. Now, that's a voting bloc that, if I was a politician, I would consider highly valuable to me. But it would seem like the large portion of our political leadership is allergic to wheelchairs, canes, and the need for ongoing medical intervention. I gotta be straight with you. When you think about the quote-unquote leadership of this giant ship that we call the United States of America, and what appears to be a concerted effort more or less subjugate an entire section of its population based on their physical capacity for capitalistic economic gain, I'm left with just one question.
How many assholes we got on this ship anyhow?
Yo!
I knew it. I'm surrounded by assholes.
All joking aside, let's do better than this, people. We can do better than this. We are better than this. So anyways, that brings us pretty much to a close for the week. I hope you all have a great day, a better tomorrow. We'll see you again next time. And I certainly hope you all enjoyed catching the views from the Oregon Trail.